This is Joanna Schrader reporting for DomesticFuel.com. I am with one of our best friends here at Domestic Fuel, and that is Tom Bias with Growth Energy. Tom, how are you?
I'm great, Joanna.
Well, Tom, great comments this morning during the panel. We're going to post the panel as well. And you really touched on some issues that it seems like we can't talk about enough. You know, we have, I think maybe through the RIN, but we still have our RFS issues. We have market access issues. We can't seem to get E15 everywhere we need to go. But before we get to that, we have to talk Farm Bill. Okay, the Senate passed a version of the Farm Bill, which is very different than the House version. So let's start. Can you kind of give us the highlight in the Senate bill on how it will help energy and agriculture, and then we'll switch to the House side from there?
Yeah, well, what the Senate has done, and this is 2 years in a row because they passed one last year, it seems to be what most all the constituency within the Farm Bill, from nutrition programs to energy programs, commodity conservation groups, all prefer. This is second year in a row they've passed it. And specifically related to the energy title, which, you know, the 2008 Farm Bill, first ever energy title. And it was all designed to help investment into next generation biofuels. What the House or Senate did was they extended the program and they funded it. And those are two critical components. What the House does is they only authorize the programs, but they put no money in there. So it's a good press release, but it doesn't mean anything. And that battle will probably end up like that if and when it gets through the House. They won't have any funding for the programs, and they'll have restrictions on whether or not USDA can fund a development under the REAP program of flex pumps into rural communities. They'll probably have a prohibition, which the Senate does not, and it'll have to be worked out in conference. But again, this is the second time in a row. They're operating on what they call an extension of the old Farm Bill right now. That extension expires on September 30th. And so absent any action, either all the programs are going to end, which is very unlikely, or they probably have to do another extension. I think people are somewhat optimistic, at least getting the leadership in the House to recognize that they're going to do a Farm Bill and they're going to bring it up for debate. Where that debate goes, anybody knows, because, you know, the House has been a pretty tough body to get anything through on anything related to government programs.
Well, let's talk a little bit more about the House side. So from an outsider looking into D.C., although I've spent some time with you guys in D.C., I feel like big oil is behind this campaign with the House, to your point, to put it in writing but not put anything behind it. Am I right here, or what's going on there?
Yeah, they're big oil's looking at every opportunity they can to keep alternative fuels out of the marketplace. I mean, we've seen it. You know, Joanna, I've been with Growth for 4.5 years. We've seen it on the regulatory front. They've erected regulatory hurdles. They've erected legal hurdles. They're using a massive, well-funded, multi-millions of dollars in a PR campaign. And they've not been able to succeed, so now their option is to go to Congress. It's kind of like throwing a Hail Mary, and they hope to connect with Congress to undo all the good that's been done for the production of a very competitive, less expensive, better for the environment fuel, and that's ethanol, biodiesel, and what comes down in the next generations.
What happens if there's no Farm Bill, and on top of that, there's no extension? What happens to energy? What happens to those agricultural producers who are growing crops for energy?
Well, it would be tragic, because any business, whether you're in farming, whether you're in ethanol, whether you're in conservation programs or nutrition programs, you need some certainty of what those programs are. And Congress has been in this mode of, well, let's just extend things for a few months and kick the can down the road. That's tough to operate in. People need to know the rules. Farmers have to plan well in advance before the planting season. What are they going to grow? What are the programs? What are the parameters that I'm going to have to deal with? And not giving them that certainty is almost as tragic as what they come up with. And so I remain hopeful they'll finally come to some resolution this year. It remains to be seen what they do in the House. As you mentioned, oil's got a lot of supporters there. They're going after our industry every which way they can. So we'll see. We were able to successfully get the Senate to pass a bill that did no damage and did some good for the biofuels industry, and we hope that happens in the House.
Well, Tom, let's talk about the consumers. Do you feel like consumers understand what will happen if the RFS gets repealed, if this farm bill doesn't pass and we have support for energy and agriculture? Do you think they have any idea what's going to happen at the pump?
I don't. You know, and Joanna, you've heard me say this before. I don't think farmers understand what's going to happen to their livelihoods if these folks succeed on the RFS. And that's why if any of your listeners pick up the phone, call your congressman, call your senator, call your governor, call your county commissioner, express to them how important this renewable fuel standard is. And consumers need to do the same. They benefit tremendously at the pump, but no one realizes they're benefiting tremendously from the pump. And, you know, we've focused a lot on marketing of higher blends and the benefits of ethanol through the NASCAR and the American Ethanol Campaign, our partners with corn growers and ethanol plants around the country, to do that. But it takes a while for that to soak in. And I really don't think people notice the benefits. But currently, with the high RIN prices and that value being passed back to consumers on higher blends, you're seeing a big spread. You know, ethanol E85 selling for $1.86 in Iowa. Compare that to $4 gasoline, right? So people are starting to see the benefits of E15, E30, E85, and what that can mean for our country. Because otherwise, the alternative is we continue to rely on fossil fuels. All the new oil finds are more expensive to extract. They're more damaging to the environment. And our industry is going the opposite way. We're becoming more efficient, using less water, using less energy, getting a higher yield out of the feedstocks in the terms of gallons that we produce. So you got two industries going the opposite direction. And which is best for America? Which is best for American jobs? Which is best for the environment and consumers? We are.
Now, consumers have always been able to join Growth Force, and if they haven't, they can now. But you actually, here at the Fuel Ethanol Workshop, are also letting consumers become members of Growth Energy. So talk a little bit about, you know, how they can become involved and what they get with their Growth Energy membership.
Yeah, they actually get some involvement in our organization, and something that we've been talking about for quite some time. A lot of people have an interest in seeing our industry succeed. They've never had that opportunity to become direct members. And for a very nominal $15, which very inexpensive for somebody to join, but they can be part of it. They can weigh in. We want to get them engaged. We want them interacting with the policymakers, with the opinion makers in their communities. Because, you know, you see what our critics fund on a daily basis is these baseless, often factless, attacks on our industry, and we need people to stand up and say, whoa, that's not right. We use less energy to produce ethanol. We use less water. We're providing more feed for livestock, both here at home and around the world. Your car's not going to break down. Your car's actually going to perform better. You know, that story needs to be told, and really, if you look at the debate or the fight, oil's got the money, but we have the constituency to be able to win this fight, and if people get involved. So I would encourage them to do so.
Great. And lastly, Tom, let's talk a bit about E15. You know, we started to gain some traction there, and then Iowa, we can't even get it. I live in Iowa. Every time I drive around, I'm looking for an E15 pump. What happened there, and when are we going to get it back?
Well, again, oil has done a good job of trying to block the use of higher blends. And one of the reasons, Joanna, that they don't want to see higher blends, because if we break that blend wall and we get to E15 and the volumes that be required into the future, then they're going to lose even more market share. So it's a fight over the money. We're slowly knocking down every hurdle on the regulatory front. We've won every legal battle against oil on their challenge to E15. We're starting to get more and more interest as RIN values go up from retailers and other obligated parties that they're going to need to blend in order to meet the requirements of the 2007 Act. And it's happening. It's just not been as fast as we all wished, but it's been 4.5 years since Growth Energy filed that E15 petition. And we're working on it. I think everyone understands what this fight's about. And it really is about cracking that blend wall in order to save the renewable fuel standard.
Great. Well, thanks, Tom. And, you know, let's check in soon when we see what happens with the House on the Farm Bill.
Absolutely. It's always great talking to you, Joanna.